now at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott, and hello to you. How are you? And what is going on in your plant world? If you'd like to talk about it, you can simply call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Leading off every Saturday morning will be the Good Gardening Stroll, and that will be after just a sort of an introduction. Afterwards, we'll discuss what's impacting your trees, your perennials, that hillside, shrubs, lawn, ground cover, and anything planted in the outdoors. Or else we can step inside your house and take a look at your tropical world. From routine care and maintenance, pet impact, and specifically talking maybe about potting mixes or improving your soils, or pruning, insect troublemakers, suspicious growth or spots, transplanting, taking cuttings, and beyond. I'll share my knowledge to help you make good decisions on what action is needed or should be considered. Remember, this is your show, and I certainly appreciate you having me in your plant world. Another very important player is James. He's producing today. He answers the phone and pushes all the buttons. So when you call, James just needs your first name, and that's pretty much it. By the way, I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And besides, on Saturday morning, we can get together at your home, and I can take a look at your plant world with an on-site consultation, which I call a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, and on the home page, there will be my email address, which is mmillerdesigns22@gmail.com, or my phone number is there as well. Well, let's get strolling. This walk is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Stepping out the back door, ooh, starry, starry, early morning. Ah, the moon, well, it's past full now, but it still looks pretty good. The stars I'm talking about on this starry, starry morning were not in the sky, but on the lawn, the cars, the tree leaves, the tree branches, all kinds of other things as well. It was, the frost was unbelievable, and it was so sparkling, it was absolutely fantastic. And today I decided to take a trip down, to Wilmore Park for a chilly walk. Wilmore Park was established in 1947, actually 2 years before I was even born, so it's been there for quite a while. And it runs along Hampton and River de Pere. There's a fence that separates the two. And, boy, this park is just, it runs and runs and keeps going and keeps going. And on the east end, you're greeted by tennis courts and then first of numerous pavilions, a mixture along the parkway of numerous trees from conifers and deciduous, some older and mature, others like teenagers. Lots of wide open lawn areas, ball fields. There's an equipment building, and there's North Lake, which is a public fishing area. And that's St. Louis Parks working with the Missouri Conservation Department. This is where the roadway ends, and the park keeps going way beyond that, and with walkways and headed towards the playground. This park is unbelievable as far as the options there is. Lots of benches and just recreation-type circumstances. But it's near where Tracy and I live, and when we drive by it, it's really not used as much as you would think it would be. But I guess it's location or whatever it is, or maybe it's just when we're driving by, it's not the time when a lot of people are there. The playground is really unique. There's a fountain near it, and as I said before, the North Lake, you can do some public fishing if you like. So if you have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. And we'll be back after these messages.
Local news and information direct to your smart speaker. Just say, play KMOX.
Yes, folks, we do have phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. This weather is just totally wild. To think that a couple days ago it was 60, I was sitting in the backyard just absorbing the sun because I am solar powered, so I do need the sun. And then today it was like, oh my goodness gracious, like I said, with the starry, starry nights, only it was on the ground and everything else with the frost and the temperatures. And just Scott talking about the weather during his news broadcast, the temperatures going up and down and all around. That's why my nose is kind of clogged up and everything else. It's really just totally wild and crazy. But in your landscape, I'm still, you know, the birds are just really enjoying it. And because I throw the bird seed out, and for the first time this past week, actually had a gang of 9 crows that came down and helped themselves to some of the bird seed too. First time I've seen crows come in. And this morning, the crows seem to get up as early as the squirrels do. The squirrels are running all over the place, like when I was walking through Wilmore Park. And then you could hear the crows in the distance. I don't know where they're going or anything else, but both those are up very, very early. So there's all kinds of stuff going on that you might want to take a look at. And that's like check the Missouri Botanical Garden, because I'm sure they have classes coming up that might interest you. Also, the University of Illinois Extension Service, they do offer some classes as well. Sometimes garden centers will have people that will give talks. So that's something you can really learn things very quickly, and you can really get some insight on certain plant materials if you have some interest, by going to the Plant Society meetings. And they can, you know, they meet lots of different places, many of them at the Botanical Garden, different nights in different times during the week and things like that. But the people in the Plant Societies give you that kind of insight that, yes, books and everything else, you can get that information, but these people will show you or tell you about the little sort of tricks that you can learn very early on. So, other things that you need to be watching out for. Last week, as I was talking, I haven't seen any of the spring flowering bulbs coming up out of the ground. But a lady called and she said she had various bulbs from tulips to daffodils and crocus all the way around her house at various locations. I thought, well, usually it's only going to be on the south side of your house because that's the warmest side. But she had them in all different directions, so that's pretty impressive with her doing that. And other things, too, I've got, as you know, lots of different summer bulbs. So the daffodils and tulips, no, not daffodils, not tulips, nothing like that. The cannas and the elephant ears and caladiums, and I've got to start separating those and getting those ready to be planted out in pots, because I do some in pots, and I've started to do some in the ground as well. So other things that you might start taking a look at is the evergreens, like boxwood, broadleaf evergreens. You're probably going to notice that there's going to be quite a bit of the interior leaves dropping off. And one thing I really noticed lately, the evergreen euonymus, that early cold spell must have really done some damage, because most of the varieties that I see of the evergreen euonymus, broadleaf evergreen, have all the leaves are really brown. So they're going to recover from that, but it's going to be a little bit of while before they're going to be kind of back to the shape that they were before. And this was whether they were hedges, individual plants, or anything else. So that really kind of struck me. I know it got cold early, but it caught the plant material, obviously, at least the euonymus, by surprise. Keep an eye out. The chickweed still is just going nuts. That's the cool season annual weed that actually started germinating and growing in August, and consequently, it's still going. And the seeds can lay there for a long time. And I just can't believe that I go after them and pull them up myself. I don't use herbicides in certain in the majority of locations because I like to see what's coming up weed-wise and everything else. And so consequently, the chickweed, I have Ryerson edging around the garage and the house and everything else, and I backfill that with rock, and this is where the chickweed is most prominent, more so than in the lawn areas. I did, last week, I talked about cutting my grass. I did cut my front lawn and backyard. I have zoysia, and you say, people say, well, why would you mow it when it's brown? Well, it was a little bit elongated, and I cut it down pretty low, and that way I'm going to minimize, hopefully, any kind of, you know, fungus problems as a result of that, because even though the blades are long and brown, they can still be packed down by just rain and everything else. And that just kind of sets up a scenario where the humidity is just a little bit tougher. And though we haven't had much sort of snow this year, we've had that one little spell. Still, that's another situation where the humidity as a result of the moisture from, you know, either rain or, you know, anything, ice, sleet, snow, can cause, you know, fungus problems. And fungus in lawns is really a very difficult thing to do. If you do have any trees that branching-wise that you want to do some pruning, yes, you're probably better off to do the pruning on the majority of them, except the maples. They prefer maples and beeches and birches. They like to be pruned in the summertime, but the majority of the other trees can be pruned better before the new growth begins. So consequently, you want to get out there and do some pruning. If you've got all kinds of, let's say, sprigs shooting off this trunk or the base or whatever it happens to be, get those cut off and make sure that you make a pretty clean cut, and the cut, don't leave any kind of stub, because that just offers an opportunity for something to take off. And also, this time of year is a good time to sort of check any of the organic or inorganic fertilizers, herbicides, insecticides, or fungicides to make sure that during this, you know, cold spell that we just had, plus the cold spell earlier on, didn't do any kind of damage. So just kind of, you can check it without knowing what it's all about. And also with the bag material, make sure that if you had it sitting on the ground or on the floor, that, is there moisture in there? Is it kind of like solidified? If it's solid, then that's kind of what you want to avoid. So, well, we've got a couple phone calls, but we do have more phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Jerry's yard. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like some recommendations on some indoor flowering plants that maybe would fit like in a 6-inch pot that is non-toxic to animals, because there's some dogs in the house. And a lot of them I look at, you look up the name and, ooh, toxic to cats or dogs if they eat the leaves. You got any recommendations?
Yeah, as far as flowering, realize that any of the things that are going to be flowering, you could even try to grow something as simple as geraniums inside. And that's, you know, even though you consider geraniums for the most part a plant that's outside, they do pretty well inside in a nice sunny window. And they, you know, will give you pretty long, extensive flowering periods. Anything inside, though, is going to have a rest period, so nothing's going to be, you know, consistently flowering. And then you could do something as simple as some of the bulbs, like series, like the amaryllis. You'll get about 4 to 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks, depending upon, you know, where it's exposed or where it's sitting and everything else, of a really large, you know, flowering circumstance. Then you have the Christmas cactus, or the Thanksgiving cactus, which are a tropical-type cactus, and I don't believe that those have a toxic-type leaf either for your pets. And then if there's, I don't know how big your dogs are, But if they're sitting up pretty high, the dog can't really get to, you know, to the foliage to be eating them.
Right. The other thing, I do have some Christmas cactus. The other thing is some of them don't have flowers, but they have colored type leaves on them, which would be okay, too. It'd add a little color other than just plain green.
Right.
And I didn't know if there are any of those varieties that are out there.
Well, I mean, there's all. I mean, the crotons, C-R-O-T-O-N, or codiums. They lots of different kinds of colorful leaves with those. And I don't believe that those are toxic to pets. But you know, I might be wrong about that. But I think they're pretty much safe. Again. I don't know what attracts, you know, certain animals to certain vegetation, but that should give you some very much of a color circumstance. If you want something a little bit more shrubby like, the gardenia is a good one for a house plant that flowers off and on throughout the year.
Super. Great. There's a lot of options there.
Great. Well, good luck.
Thanks.
Sure. And now let's go from Jerry's yard over to Barb's yard. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Mike. Good morning. You were speaking of the bulbs, and it made me think about my iris. Is this a good time of year to be feeding them? And what is the best location for planting the iris bulbs as far as north, south, east, west?
Basically, are we talking about the classic flag type iris? Are we talking about Japanese iris or Siberian iris?
The regular old fashioned iris.
Okay. Fertilizing to any plant material when it's dormant, which the iris are dormant right now, is not advisable because, especially with our crazy weather and everything else, the fertilizer could be down. The plants could, you know, absorb it. That might trigger some growth premature. And then if we have another, let's say, colder spell a little bit later, then any kind of actively growing, even though it might not be really pronounced, it could do some, you know, some damage. And as far as exposure goes, they're pretty tough, but they really prefer more sun than they, you know, than a part shade or a shaded location. They will survive.
Okay.
They just won't flower as much in those type of locations.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Sure. My pleasure. And we've got phone lines open again, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. With your house plants, if they're actively growing and you want to fertilize them, you can fertilize them. You're better off to go with this time of year about half the label rate. So if it says 2 tablespoons per gallon of water, obviously half of that would be just 1 tablespoon. And the stuff, as I said before, outdoors, don't do anything as far as fertilizing goes until you start to see the buds open, whether those buds are for flowering or whether the buds are for foliage, either way. And in another week or two, we should be starting to see some of the very early blooming trees, shrubs, and things along that line. Witch hazel is going to be the first thing that's going to be in flower. And that's really kind of striking and spectacular. This is a time of year, too, that the deer, if you've got, if you live in a neighborhood where there are deer or where there are chipmunks, voles, mice, rabbits, they are going to be potentially doing some damage to your plant material. So just kind of watch out and be careful with all that. The moles, the ground is still pretty darn cold, so mole activity should be minimal. But if you start to see piles of dirt in your yard, realize that that's mole activity. And what they're doing is they can only tunnel so much, and they have to push some of the soil up to the surface so they can keep going. And the reason why they're going is because they're going after earthworms. And while the ground is still cold, the earthworms are not going to be moving too much. And so consequently, the moles won't be out there doing anything as far as tunneling because there's nothing for them to eat. So it's strictly that reason. Just realize, too, that fallen leaves keep that debris from building up on your lawn or your plant beds, because, again, that creates a moisture circumstance and fungus problems. As we live right across the street from Christie Park, consequently, the prevailing winds are starting to blow, you know, the leaves from the park into our yard. And in the past week or so, I've actually had 4 65-gallon leaf plastic bags of leaves, which I take the bags. I don't throw them into the yard waste dumpsters, but I dump out of the plastic bags. So I fill the yard waste dumpster with all the leaf debris myself. I can tell just by looking at it that it's, you know, stuff that's coming out of my yard. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Hey, it's Tom Ackerman. I'll be making two appearances at the Cardinals Winter Warm-Up this weekend. Sports on a Sunday morning from 10 to 12 and Monday from 10 to 1 with Chris Ronji. We'll be at Cardinals Nation inside Ballpark Village on the home of the Cardinals, KMOX.
This weather can really have an impact on your soils in the ground, or in, if you do have pots. I have some pots that I leave out year-round. And consequently, with this freezing and thawing, what it does is soil contracts, it expands, it contracts, it expands according to the temperature. And then when it's doing that, it's also creating air pockets. Then when it gets cold again, the air pockets are filling up with cold air, and then consequently the plant materials, feeder roots, can have some damage to them. So, and also this, you know, this time of year, there's not a whole lot to do in your landscape, but one thing you can do is deep root feeding, and that's where you actually take an electric drill with an earth auger, which is a larger drill bit, about an inch in diameter, and auger holes around the perimeter of woody plant materials, be it shrubs, be it trees, or whatever, and then backfill those holes with compost. So what happens is you auger a hole, then move in a circular action around. You start about halfway out from the trunk to the drip line, and consequently you auger a hole, then move 2 feet over, auger another hole, backfill, and then that's a very easy way to do. Also, what you can do is on your lawn, if you'd like to, you can just spread some compost on the surface of your lawn. Especially, it doesn't really matter if it's a cool season lawn or a warm season lawn, and just kind of, you know, rake it to smooth it out, and that will just kind of melt it down into the ground. And what that, you know, going back to the deep root feeding, what that does, it doesn't necessarily feed your plant material directly, but it feeds the soil. And healthy soil is the best way to have a healthy, you know, better looking plant material. So keep that in mind also. Mulches, you can do mulching this time of year. And when I worked at the Botanical Garden in English Woodland Garden, this is a time of year where there really wasn't too much going on, but I would be out in the Woodland Garden and I would be spreading the mulch this time of year. And it's beneficial from the standpoint of moisture retention and also weed control. So just realize that that's what mulches can do. The type of mulch you choose, there's various different types. Certain plant material will do better with a certain type of mulch just because of the acidic quality of a mulch versus another, let's say, one that's not quite as acidic. So if you've got broadleaf evergreens like azaleas, holly, those type things, or Nandina domestica, heavenly bamboo, anything at all, even though it's not technically a bamboo, it is evergreen and it will, you know, really prefer to have a mulch that is more acid-based. Worth something like, let's say, lilacs or clematis, they don't necessarily need the acidity. They, you know, would prefer a more alkaline situation. So you can get a mulch around and put around that type of plant that's a little bit more neutral. So just kind of keep that in mind. Other things that you need to be thinking about just kind of in general is just keep an eye on everything. If you haven't had a soil test done, get a soil test done. This is a good time of year to do it. And one of the most important things with a soil test, besides telling you the nutrient level of the plant of your soil that the plant material is growing in, is also going to be your pH. And the soil pH goes from one size, for let's say it's on a scale of 1 to 14. 7 is neutral. Anything below 7 is acidic. Anything above 7 is alkaline. And to do a home test as far as checking your soil pH, it's kind of really a waste of time and effort. But if you want to go ahead and do that, that's fine. But just realize that the analysis is not going to be as good as a real soil test. And soil tests are not really all that expensive. And keep in mind that the soil test will tell you, watch out if you've been doing the same kind of fertilizing for an extended period of time, that you might have extravagant levels of certain nutrients built up where you think you're really helping your plant material by fertilizing. You may be doing, to the disadvantage of the plant material by using the same fertilizer, whether it be even like triple 12. The last two numbers are phosphorus and potassium. And those two nutrients have a tendency and will stay in your soil for extended periods of time, and they build up, where the first number, the nitrogen, only stays viable for the plant material for a few days, and then it becomes a gas and goes up into the air. Now, when we do have lightning storms and things like that, then the nitrogen comes back down. That's why after rain, a lot of times things kind of sparkle a little bit, simply because they're getting a nice, nice bath or shower of nitrogen. Soil texture is really important as well. So what that is just whether the percentage of sand, silt, clay, all those kind of things make a really difference. And the texture is really crucial as far as the ability of plant material to send out the feeder roots. And the feeder roots is what absorbs the nutrients and moisture. So that's what is really extremely important. The organic matter is essential for the formation of the soil structure. It reduces compaction. And that's, when you're adding organic matter like compost to the ground, and that really helps with a water holding capacity. Also helps with, like I was talking about before, the freezing and thawing cycle. It's ideal to have the organic matter about at least 3% or greater. And you can, again, the soil test will tell you what the sort of percentage of organic matter is in your soil. And it's measured, really, a soil test is really unbelievably important just overall. If you're really serious about your plant material, rather than just kind of guessing and doing the same thing over and over and over again, what you can do, outside is start watching for some of the trees, or the buds are going to start to open up. And one of the earlier ones that is going to be blooming is not really a real spectacular one. It's going to be a silver maple. And they have small greenish kind of yellow twigs at the end. And that's where the actual flower, and that's what makes the maple squirts going to start happening at that particular point. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. I'll be back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. It's a good time to start visiting your garden center, maybe getting some, even just lawn seed and just germinating it, not like in your yard or anything else, but just having a pot and putting it in a nice sunny window. Just to have something new to be growing, that's, kind of fun. Or you can head, the garden centers are going to start having things like, obviously, packs of seed, you know, the type, the annuals or the perennials or things like that. But they're going to also start having some of the early spring type things like rhubarb plants. And even if you think, oh, I don't really like rhubarb or I don't want it, they're really kind of interesting just to grow. And you don't have to have them there. Even though they're perennial, you don't have to keep them forever. That's what I do. I grow things until I kind of get bored with them. And then consequently, then I just put them in the yard waste dumpster and, go on to something else. Let's head over to Gene's yard now. Gene, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good.
Hey, I have two tulip trees. They're up in the country. And we built a wall, so we had to put like 2 foot of soil up. And I know it's up the trunk. Are those for sure goners? Or should I keep watering them?
Now, are these true tulip trees, or are you talking about a magnolia that many people call a tulip tree?
No, these are true tulip trees.
Yeah, I mean, they're a little bit tougher. I don't know what's the diameter of the trees? Trunks.
Probably 12 inches.
Yeah, so I would say if you've piled soil up on the trunks, that's not a good thing, and it's not necessarily going to kill them instantly, but what it's going to cause is potential, because of the moisture up next to the bark, it's going to start rotting the bark off. And then when the bark starts rotting off, that's where all the vascular system and the veins of the tree is. And then consequently, that's going to head them downhill. It's not going to be something instantaneous, but it's not a good sign.
Okay. We kind of figured, but we still keep watering them. I just thought, a hail mayor might do it, but... Anyway, okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And you have a good day.
I mean, they're tough trees. You don't have to really do any additional watering, just because the soil's on them or just, and just kind of in general. What also another concern is if you built a wall, if the wall has concrete related to it, then that's going to change the soil pH of where they're growing, and that could have an adverse impact as well. So not only – so everything – several different things can make a bad circumstance for your tulip trees.
Okay. So it's most likely it's going to rot anyway.
Right. And okay. Again, they're not going to die within the next few years. It could take several years before they do. But you're just going to notice that the activity as far as the new growth and the extension of the branches and things along that line is going to just start diminishing.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll keep them for a few years.
Sure.
I could be dead then, so, Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure, Mike.
You have a good day.
Yes, you do. Have a good day yourself. And now let's go over to Lisa's yard. Hi, Lisa.
Hi there. I have questions about growing herbs in my inside my house in the wintertime. I've tried. I keep killing them. Do you have any suggestions?
You have grow lights?
No, just windows.
Yeah, just windows. Even south-facing windows is probably not going to be enough, sunlight to actually, to make them do anything at all as far as growth-wise. In theory, you should be able to do it, but just watch out when you're growing. I'm assuming you're growing them from seed. Is that what you said?
No, I bought plants. I bought a rosemary, actually, a rosemary plant from a garden center. Planted that kind of died. And then I had bought the little containers you buy at the grocery store,
right?
Like basil and stuff like that. And I threw that in a pot because I didn't need all of it. And both of them died.
Yeah, the rosemary, they're pretty tough. So, and really with the basil, buying them at a grocery store is probably, didn't have proper care. So even though they looked healthy and the foliage smelled good and everything else, they probably weren't in good shape. But I grow rosemary pretty much every year and have pretty good luck with it. So the thing with the herbs in general is watch out with the amount of watering you do, because you can
probably
overwater
them
very
easy. Okay. And I have one more question. I took your suggestion on planting some bulbs in pots for the winter.
Uh-huh.
And then I was listening to the home improvement line guy a few weeks ago, and he talked about with all the weather we're having, make sure you cover stuff. Otherwise, your ceramic concrete pipes, pots can break. So then I covered it and I thought, well, that's not going to work because then doesn't it need to get rain and or snow on top of those bulbs all winter in order for them to be okay in the spring?
Right. Absolutely. So, okay. So these were ceramic pots that you have?
Actually, it's an old concrete water tub that I have out in my backyard. And I always plant different spring stuff in it. But I thought it would be fun to have bulbs in there.
Right.
I just didn't want it to break. I mean, it's old. Someday it's going to break. But anyway, I thought, oh, I'll protect it. Okay. Well, next time I'll do something different. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, what you can do since it's old and it's concrete is when these finish, just pull all the soil out and you can waterproof the concrete and then you can put the soil back in. I'm assuming these, you know, this particular container has drainage holes to it.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yes. Because it was set up for a wash machine.
Oh.
And water would drain into it. So yeah, I have a good size exit at the bottom. Oh, I never thought about internally water sealing it. That's a great idea.
Yeah, okay. And that way, you know, that soaks right into it. And so, basically, something of that sort of heavy duty circumstance, if it doesn't really have any cracks in it, then more moisture is not going to get in there, and it's not going to cause it to crumble apart. So.
That the soil itself, when it freezes, won't push the sides of it?
No, it won't.
Huh.
Because really, when soil freezes, it actually contracts. It's when
That's
it's
true.
Got moisture, then it expands.
Okay. I will, maybe I'll go outside and take the tarp off today. See what happens the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks so much, Mike. Appreciate
sure.
it.
Sure. My pleasure. Bye-bye. And this time of year, it's going to be really pretty soon that you're going to start to see the forsythia blooming. And the forsythia blooming means that there's the annual warm season weeds are going to start emerging. And that includes spurge, ragweed, purslane, knotweed, lamb's quarter, all kinds of different grasses, crabgrass, barnyard grass, goosegrass. Violets are going to start, you know, all this takes off at the same time. So, consequently, these things are actually going to be growing from seed. So, if you have had a historic problem in certain areas, whether it's a bed space or in your lawn area, and you're really considering putting a pre-emergent down, wait until the forsythia is in bloom, and then consequently, that's when you would be putting the pre-emergent down. Or you can go to your favorite garden center and get a soil thermometer. And when you start to, you know, you just stick it into the ground, wait until you see the temperature change, if it's going to change. And what it is if it's 55 degrees, the soil temperature, 55 degrees for 3 days in a row, that's the time when a pre-emergent needs to go down as well. So keep that in mind. Other things that are, you know, going to be problematic as far as the warm season weeds, that includes foxtail. And foxtail, as I said before, lamb's quarter, knotweed, and the spurge is probably the one that there's several different kinds of spurges, and some of them can be really aggravating. But this is a good time of year. This morning probably would, if you got up early and got to see that sparkling stuff all over your lawn and your car windshields and everything else, it's really kind of neat, but you can head out and just kind of wander around in your yard and start looking for buds expanding, and that's when you're going to be wanting to take, you know, action related to several different factors depending upon what type of plant it really is. And as I said earlier, if you have a euonymus and you start to see, you know, it's a broadleaf evergreen type of euonymus and it's all brown, that's not a good sign. So, Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline. I will be back after the news.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott. And this is the KMOX Garden Hotline second hour. which will have the tip of the trowel, which is a special recognition of an individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me this past week. And it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Right now, if you have any ideas, questions, concerns, or comments related to your plant world, indoors or outside, you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120, and we can talk about it. Thanks for having me on your show, by the way, where discussions can range from making a plant selection for a very specific location, how to care for it, what's going to be the mature size, do you need to watch out for, let's say, proximity to concrete or whatever it happens to be where that's in your landscape. And we can talk about, you know, peak seasons, humdrum times, whether they're annuals, spring or summer bulbs, herbs, vegetables, fruit trees, evergreens, herbaceous ground covers or evergreen type ground covers, perennials, cascading, house plants, maybe some upright ones, maybe some trees, cool or warm season lawns, shrubs, classic roses, rose bushes, conifers, deciduous trees, and annual vines, perennial vines. How about a fountain or a water garden? How's that going to impact the surrounding plant material? I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path that will take you towards your desired results, but strictly offered for you to consider. And by the way, a very important member of the show is James. He's producing, so when you call in, he's going to be answering the phone. He just needs your first name. And when he's not answering the phone, but he does it at the same time many times, he's pushing all the buttons. So when I talk or you talk, we can hear. And that's what the producer is all about. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And besides our Saturday morning get-together, I can come out to your plant world and take a look around for an on-site consultation, which I call a walk and talk. My website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, on the homepage has my email address, which is mmillerdesigns22@gmail.com, or my phone number either way. Today's Tip of the Trowel is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the Trowel goes out to everybody that's, you know, kind of looking out in the outdoors, looking out in your windows, looking out of, you know, walking around in your yard and realizing winter's not almost over, but this is a good time just to be outside. And some of the days are a little nicer than other days. But this is very, very important to get out and find out what's going on rather than just kind of taking an inactive approach. I see lots of people in our neighborhood that are wandering around in their yard, and it's just kind of fun to do. So a tip of the trowel goes out to basically everybody that spends some time out in their yard this time of year, not just when the weather is just perfectly wonderful, but you know, other times as well. So tip of the trowel to you. Thank you very much. I always find it entertaining what people are, you know, doing as I take a couple walks a day. And sometimes I'm a little bit surprised by what people are doing. Just like people were surprised last Saturday that I was out cutting my zoysia and with a mower. So, I mean, when one person went by and they laugh like, what in the world is this guy doing? But anyway, enough of that stuff. Let's head over to Nancy's yard. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Mike. Every year I would put down the bagged wood mulch, you know, the kind you get three bags for $10 and it comes in colors in my landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
But it's getting too hard now for me to put it down every year because it looks so terrible at the beginning because it's faded. So I'm having a landscaping company come out now and put the nice landscaping mulch down. So my question is, should I try to get up all that old faded mulch, or will it be okay for them to come out and put the nice mulch on top of it?
You can put the nice mulch. The problem is just how it's not necessarily, you know, the faded or the quality of what the old mulch was. It's just the depth. So around trees and shrubs, you really don't want more than like 4 inches or so. A little bit more is okay. And around perennials or in ground cover circumstances or those situations, you only want about 1 to 2 inches. So that's where the problem could come from, is just the depth that can create somewhat of a nightmare in that situation.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, it like disintegrates, too.
Sure.
So I don't, you know, you can see some of the dirt in between some of the mulch, but I thought, well, maybe I should get all that old stuff up.
No, because it's melted down, you know, basically biodegradable. That's what mulch does. And as it's doing that, it's actually helping your soil. And then consequently, that will help whatever plant material is growing in close proximity.
Oh, great. Well, that's good news now. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Sure. My pleasure.
Bye.
And now where should we go? Let's go over to Phil's yard. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Michael. A couple of questions. I've got a Dawn redwood tree, very tall, and the roots are coming up on the surface. Next door to me is a irrigation system in their yard. I can cut the roots off, but then should the whole tree come down?
Cutting the roots off, that could really, you know, be some damaging circumstance for the tree, because you figure that, the surface roots, that's actually, extends out from the trunk, obviously, and, they're on the surface because of the type of soil there is and everything else that they're growing in, but that's where the feeder roots are, and then consequently, when you cut that root off, you're reducing the amount of feeder roots, which has been developed over a period of time, which helps support the above ground growth, so it could lead to just kind of a slow decline.
Yeah, we're kind of worried about the irrigation thing. That storm might be damaged too, so I guess the tree should come down then, really.
Well, I mean, it's unfortunate, but yeah, I mean,
okay,
I say you should,
okay.
But and just realize when you take the tree down, even if you grind the stump out, that location is going to be very difficult to have anything grow.
I got you. Okay. I had a burning bush I cut down about a little over half. Can you put paint on the stubble or where the cut was to seal it?
No, that's not necessary. Days of old, it used to help, but that's when paint that was used for that sealer had lead in it. Since the lead was taken out from the environmental standpoint, that it's cosmetic, it doesn't do anything, you might as well just leave it. Or you can put some color on it, but it's not going to, it's not going to help do anything for the plant.
I'm going to try one real quick one here. I've got some orchids, and they're starting to get new blooms on it now. I'm out of the regular spray for the leaves, and I've got some that's, the original bottle had 0.2% nitrogen and phosphate and potash, but the new container I have, the soluble stuff, has 58% phosphate and 8% potash. But it calls for one quarter ounce of food per quart. Will that still work okay?
Yeah, it should, but maybe, okay. I would say probably rather than going with the label rate, do about half what the label rate is.
Oh, okay, we'll do. All right, thank you.
Sure, my pleasure.
Thank you.
And why don't we go ahead and take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Bob, Karen, Paulette, and Richard.
We go where you go. 1120 AM, 98.7 FM, KMOX.com.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have some phone lines open, but let's head over to Karen's yard right now. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
Good. I have about a 12 to 15 foot stretch of perennials above a wall in my backyard, and this is a chronic problem all summer, but I'm looking out. And even though I mulched it in the fall, the wild onions are pretty much everywhere on that part. And then as the perennials start coming up, they they're difficult to get rid of all summer. I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to them now.
You could try an herbicide. What you might do is go out and can you get up on top of the wall where these are growing?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Step on the wild onions and then put a actually get some herbicide. I don't know if you're anti, you know, the ones that you know that you can. Yes.
Yeah.
But and just paint it right onto the onions. And by opening up those wounds, then that should help get the wild onions under control.
I see. And that won't hurt the perennials because I'm only doing it to the foliage on
exactly,
the onions.
Exactly, right. That's why you want to do it before the new growth begins on your perennials. But, yeah, the onions are prolific. There's one yard I walked by the other day, and I was surprised at how many they had.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much.
Sure. My pleasure.
Bye.
And let's go now to Paulette's yard. Hi, Paulette.
Hi, how are you today?
Very good.
I have a question. You were talking about rosemary before. Can you bring rosemary inside?
Well, I grow mine inside.
Okay, what do you do? Because I have lost it every year.
I have it, basically it's in an east-facing window, and that's pretty much it. It's a cool window.
You talked about watch the water. What does that mean?
Well, you just don't want to overwater.
Okay.
That's,
alrighty.
With the herbs, they're much better off underwatered than overwatered.
I've lost it every year, and I wonder what I'm doing that I'm losing it. It turns sort of grayish and dead.
Yeah, that's not a good sign. But just watch, you know, the inside of the pot when you first get it. Just, you know, it should be, you know, the potting mix should go all the way to the inside of the, you know, the pot that they're growing
right,
in.
Right.
And then let it shrink and have a gap in between the potting mix and the soil before you do any watering. And then don't water again until that gap, you know, returns. And
what
I do with mine, too, is I watch it right at first to see that, but also when it's you know, when the gap has been formed, I lift the pot to see how heavy it feels. And then rather than looking at it, because it overgrows the edge of the pot and it's kind of tough to see sometimes, then I just go by the weight of the pot. Then I water it really well. And a little bit of, if you don't have any kind of wrap, a little saucer underneath it.
Right. I have that.
Okay, so that's not sitting in directly in the water.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
So you're doing everything, it sounds like, right, but and I'm assuming they're in a sunny window.
As much as what we can get, yes. Yeah. you know, it's not in direct sun. I don't have direct sun, but I have it where it is light. And it was doing well, and then all of a sudden, part of the plant sort of, it died. So I cut yesterday, I pulled some of that away from the ground and cut that off. Is there any hope for the rest of that plant?
Well, it's hard to say. If it's off a single stem, then, it may be that you got a root system. But also, another thing I do, I rotate my pot a quarter of a turn every day.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right. Okay, all righty. Well, I'll try. I love rosemary, and I love the plant. And I had wondered if it's possible to bring it inside at all.
Yeah, I mean, if it's in the ground, don't dig it up out of the ground and bring it inside, but leave it in a pot, and then you can bring
it in
a pot,
inside. Right.
Right.
Okay, all righty. Thank you so much, and you have a good day.
You do the very same thing.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And now let's go over to Richard's yard. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Mike, I've got a 20-foot arborvitae in the backyard that I decorated for Christmas. How long can I leave the lights on that thing?
The only thing, you know, the worst thing that could possibly happen is, depending upon what type of lights you put on it, is if the light bulbs, even though they're probably, you know, indoor, outdoor, whatever it happens to be, if they get hot, then that could do a little bit of damage from an aesthetic standpoint. But you can leave them on for, you know, quite a period of time without with if there's no heat problem related to the light bulbs, then nothing else is going to make much difference.
You know, the next question is, can I leave them on all year? I mean, why take them now?
Well, the problem with leaving them out, you know, all year long, what happens is sort of the weather and everything else could sort of degrade the wiring, and you may just shorten the life of the strand of your lights.
So the danger is to the lights, not to the tree.
Right, exactly.
Okay, thanks very much.
Sure. I mean, you could leave them, and they might be fine, and you might get a couple years out of them, because if you have a, let's say, a larger arborvitae or a larger whatever you're putting your seasonal lights on, it can be a lot of work, and then it's a lot of work to put them on, of course, and then it's a lot of work to take them off. So just that's where the sort of the downside.
Okay, thanks very much.
Yep, my pleasure. And 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. As you head out to your favorite garden center, probably in another couple weeks, you're going to start to see two different kind of spring flowering annuals. One's going to be the pansies. The other's going to be toad flax. If you don't know what a toad flax is, that's T-O-A-D-F-L-A-X. Check it out online, because sometimes the garden centers don't have the toad flax, but a combination of the two in the same window box or in the same pot or in the same bed space really kind of makes a little bit of interesting circumstance. And the quickest impact is going to be if you plant a larger pot, like if they're in a 4 or 6 inch pot versus a 6-pack or a flat of 36. And anytime you install any of these spring flowering annuals, either one of them, you're probably better off to pinch some of the flowers off. What that's going to do is the plant's going to have some more energy to acclimate to the situation. In other words, send some root systems out, and just watch out as far as, you know, overwatering or anything else. But pansies happen to be my favorite, but I do grow some toad flax as well. So keep that in mind. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Your home of the Cardinals.
Arenado swings and hits it deep to left field. That ball is out of here.
The Billikens.
Jumper. Yes! Billikens win!
The Chiefs.
Touchdown! Kansas City!
We are America's sports voice. KMOX.
or 1-800-925-1120. We've got some phone lines open, but right now let's head over to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Mary. Well, Happy New Year.
Same to you.
I have a dilemma. One of your callers earlier had inspired me to dig up my lantana, my one yellow lantana, which, of course, I put in a sunny window in the house, and it's doing well.
Really?
What I like about lantana, of course, is, you know, when you brush against the foliage, it has that lovely aroma.
Right.
Now, here's the dilemma with my lantana in the south window. When you rub the leaves, they smell like kerosene. I know you probably can't solve the problem, but it is an unusual dilemma for me.
Well, when it's outside, how does it smell? That it shouldn't smell that much different,
I know it shouldn't, but outside it has that lovely aroma on the foliage. So I know you probably can't solve the problem, but I just was curious. Maybe sometime when your other caller who's successful with lantana, maybe if she's listening, she can check her foliage and see if it's me or what. So anyway, I don't expect you to be able to solve the problem, but I just wanted to mention this.
That's kind of interesting because I can't, you know, it's just surprising there's going to be that much of a change from the smell outside, unless when you're outside, you're smelling all kinds of other, let's say, atmospheric type things.
No. I've grown lantana along. No, I'm just saying, I wondered if the true sunshine had anything to do with this.
Well, we'll never know. Yeah, when it's inside, it's going to be in the true sunshine anyway, even if it's behind a, you know, a window pane.
I know. So. Anyway, that's my comment, and I hope you have a good week.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, I've never really noticed. It's been a long time since I've grown any lantana inside, so I can't honestly say, you know, I've smelled and noticed the difference. But even outside, I think this, you know, the lantana doesn't have a great fragrance. Obviously, it's one that you really like, so good luck with that. And now let's head over to Ginger's yard. Hi, Ginger.
Hi, Mike. I was calling earlier. You said about tree trimming. We have a really old silver maple in our front yard, and we had someone out. They're going to think about doing a little maintenance on it. Would say in March, is that too soon to do it or not?
Well, generally with the maples, you know, they prefer to be pruned when the weather is a little bit warmer, kind of a summertime situation. So, but there's, you know, the problem with it doing it in the time that you're speaking of is the amount of sap flow.
Okay.
And the same thing in the fall. There's more sap flow. In the summertime, it seems to be less sap flow. And the sap flow, if, you know, on an older tree could be damaging from the standpoint of that it's losing what sap is, you know, that's like the vascular system of the tree bringing nutrients up to the top to, you know, for the bud formation and the bud opening in the leaves once the leaves come out and everything else.
Oh, okay. Well, it's really heavy on one side right now because of Ameren when they cut for the power lines.
Oh.
So we were trying to get a little off our roof.
Right.
But I don't know, what month would you think would be best?
I would say if they just wait for, you know, two more months.
Okay.
But
okay.
If they feel safe, you know, as far as doing it, and because this tree is, you know, kind of in a, let's say, a difficult circumstance because it's been, half of its head has been cut off,
right,
you might go ahead and just do it, and especially if it's hanging over your roof, because if it's a silver maple, then it has the maple squirts, and then your gutters fill with, you know, the maple squirts and everything else.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, that's just what I was wondering.
Okay, great.
I thank you, and you have a great day.
You did the same thing. And let's head over to Bob's yard. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Mike. Is that thanks for taking my call. With this weather that it's been warming up, getting cold, when's the best time to apply dormant oil on the fruit trees?
Basically, while they're still dormant. So look at the temperature on the label and just make sure that on the day that you do the application that it's within that temperature range. And that's about all you really need to worry about. But the dormant oil is really a really good thing to do as far as, let's say, killing lots of different kinds of insects that are either eggs or larvae or pupa that are on the stems or branches of your trees.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and if you end up, don't use it. And for anybody that doesn't apply the dormant oil, it's something that you apply during dormancy. There is a lightweight horticultural oil that you can apply after the new growth begins. So that's another thing that you could do as well.
Great. Thanks again, Mike.
Yep. And this time of year with the spring flowering, if you planted some of the smaller bulbs like the snowdrops, the grape hyacinths, the crocus, and things like that, they are going to be the first ones because they're smaller bulbs. You only plant them an inch or two deep versus the daffodils, tulips, or hyacinths, regular hyacinths, which go down 4 inches or so. So you can remember that the smaller bulbs are the first ones that are going to erupt and start to, you know, foliage is going to start showing up. And then that's, again, when you start to fertilize, as soon as you start to see the foliage coming up. And you could use a bulb booster, or you can use an all-purpose type of fertilizer as well. And you can feed as long as the plant is growing, either flowering or foliage growing or anything else, every 2 to 3 weeks. Probably every 3 weeks is going to be a little bit better. And once the foliage on your spring flowering bulbs start turning yellow, then you can go ahead and just stop fertilizing, because it's not going to be to the advantage of the plant material. And this is a good time of year to think about some of the things that you may be wanting to add to your landscape. Maybe some plants that are going to attract the butterflies. Or how about a rest stop for the hummingbirds? Or I guess it's not really a rest stop. It's more like a fast food stop. And maybe adding some colorful vines, or, you know, all kinds of different things like that can really make a huge impact. And you could get a larger pot, put a trellis in that, and grow annual vines very easily. Annual vines like morning glories and something along those lines, or hyacinth bean. Hyacinth bean vine is one of my favorite, you know, vines to grow. And I haven't grown them for a couple of years. What I like to do is I like to, you know, grow things and then kind of take a break from growing the specific thing, and then start growing it again if it's something that I really enjoy. But the hyacinth bean vine with the purplish flowers, the hummingbirds absolutely just love them. And the aesthetics of them are really, you know, fantastic. In one pack, you can harvest the bean pods will have the beans in it. And even the peas or the pods or the seeds are really kind of interesting. That it looks like almost an Oreo cookie, because the center has a white line across it or through it. So that's, you know, even just having a jar of the seeds, you know, kind of sitting around, just as a, you know, reminder. I have a small jar in my garage, and just as a reminder of how nice the seeds actually look on the hyacinth bean vine. Other things that you still want to keep looking for is if an area you're going to add some amendments to because you want to improve it, because you want to change the plant material that's growing in that space, and you want to create a raised bed, and you want to raise it up to a certain level, don't add any more than 2 inches of, let's say, a topsoil compost mix at a time, and then you work that into the existing soil, and then add 2 more inches, and then work it together, and then add 2 more inches if you're going for a total of 6 inches to raise a bed, rather than dumping 6 inches on the ground or in the space all at once and working the soil as a result of that. So just be patient. And also with some of the areas, if you're going to be developing an area for a specific type garden space, whether it's a butterfly garden or whatever it happens to be, herb garden or anything else, just be patient and maybe wait for a full year after you already improved the soil before you actually do much planting, because you're going to be battling weeds, you're going to be battling circumstances that you didn't even realize what was going on. And that's kind of the important part of being patient and not just being desperate to get something done. And what you're going to need for about every 100 square feet of garden space, you're going to need about 2 cubic yards of total, you know, your amendments to raise this, you know, bed space up. So just keep that in mind. Let's head over to Cindy's yard. Hi, Cindy.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a coral honeysuckle that we have put next to an ornamental gate that goes to nowhere. It's just a gate that's standing up. My husband has it supported. And I would like you to tell me how to prune that honeysuckle.
Do you want to prune it? You don't have to.
I don't have to prune the honeysuckle?
No. You're talking about the honeysuckle vine, right?
Honeysuckle vine, coral honeysuckle vine. And it gets very, very top heavy.
So, well,
that's going to be
its, you know, its natural habit. So basically there's more, the top, you know, however high it can go, that's going to be the most light, and that's going to be basically shadowing the area down below, so it's going to look skinny where it's coming up out of the ground.
Okay.
And so, I mean, you can prune it, but there's no reason to. It's going to change its overall impact or look for a short period of time, a couple of years, but then it's going to be back to where it is again.
Okay, great. So it flowers for a while, and then it kind of goes back, and it doesn't flower, and then it flowers not very full. There's not very many flowers. Is there something that I need to amend with this? Okay.
That's kind of the genetics of the vine type honeysuckle. So I haven't grown that particular one, but I've grown the red trumpet honeysuckle. But the first, let's say, burst of flowers is always going to be the biggest, and then a rest, and then each time it flowers again, is going to be less flowers.
Okay. May I ask another question? Do you have time for that?
Sure.
Okay. A long time ago, my father brought some Lily of the Valley from his mother's yard in the city. And it's gone. We live on 2 acres. And so it's gone from place to place a little bit. But I have it growing in a very, very shady place. And it's really, there's a big stand of it. So I want to know if it actually needs deep, deep shade, or could I put it in a place where there's a little bit moderate shade?
Yeah, and that'll grow in a part shade circumstance as well as in the deep shade. The advantage of it is that it grows in deep shade and can get thick and dense and everything else, but it doesn't have to have that.
It doesn't have to. Okay. What about wild ginger?
It's pretty much the same thing.
Okay. Okay, I can put it in a little more moderate shade. Because it's far away from my house. I want to see it more because I love these little plants.
Right.
And so, okay.
Just make sure that the amount of, if there is any kind of direct sun that's going to hit this location, whether we're talking about the Lily of the Valley or the wild ginger, that you don't want the afternoon sun striking them.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes, my pleasure.
Okay, good.
Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline. Jennifer, we'll be talking to you as soon as the break is over.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, back to the phones we go. But if you do have a question, concern, or comment, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Jennifer's yard. Hi, Jennifer.
Good morning. Mike, I have two questions for you. One is it too late to trim back a Rosa Sharon? And secondly, I have an indoor large peace lily plant, and it continues to grow beautifully, but I keep getting like one total brown leaf, and I don't know what the brown leaf means. Thank you.
The brown leaf might be the older leaves. So that's probably, just cut those off. As long as you've got a lot of good-looking leaves, that sounds perfect. And, what was your first question?
Is it too late to trim back a Rose of Sharon?
Oh, no. Because anything that blooms in the summertime, which the Rose of Sharon does, you can prune those all the way up until the new growth starts coming out or emerging. So you've got probably another 6 or 8, maybe 4 to 6 weeks, depending upon the weather, before you're going to start to see the buds starting to open.
Okay. Should I fertilize inside the peace lily?
Yeah, there's no problem doing that. Just the type of fertilizer, you can go to your favorite garden center and tell them you've got houseplants, and ask them what they have as far as what they would recommend, and then just fertilize half the label rate.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. And now let's head over to Kathy's yard. Hi, Kathy.
Morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I think I missed the earlier discussion about the euronymus, but I have several of the upright euronymus, and the leaves are all turned yellow and light brown, and a lot of them are falling off. But I tried to break off the ends, and they're still bendable, not snapping off. And I just wondered, do you think that they'll survive? It just all happened since that really cold spell.
Right, early in the season. So, it's only an aesthetic thing, but all the foliage has got that cold snap before it was ready to be that cold that fast. Those are going to drop off, but the stems, the branches, and everything else still seem to be fine. It's just going to be a little bit of while or a little bit of time before they, you know, the new growth starts coming out, and certainly before the new growth gets to be the same size as the growth that got damaged by that cold weather.
Okay, so we have keep our fingers crossed.
Right, exactly.
So they're not in the wrong zone then, right?
No, they're not. It was just, well, and technically they are, but because of our goofy weather, just like what you experienced, you've had several years where they went through the wintertime, made it fine, which is that cold snap came so soon before they were sort of like in their more dormant situation.
I see. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yes, and now let's go over to Bob's yard. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Mike, listen, I just got a quick question. When is the best time to treat for grubs? I live in South St. Louis, and there's a pretty good problem with that.
As far as grub treatment, you basically want to wait. You don't want to do it too soon because they're not going to be up near the surface, and so just kind of they've kind of burrowed down a little bit. So it's going to be all weather dependent, but let's say sometime around, I would put the grub control because they're more active, you know, up near the surface for the grub control to work when the soil starts warming up. So I would say probably I wouldn't do it any sooner than mid-April. You do it any, you know, earlier than that, and it's just going to be kind of a waste of your time and effort and money for the grub control.
Okay, one more question, Mike. What is your best, what do you like to use for grub control? And I have a Great Dane that smiles at you every day.
It really doesn't matter. I don't, you know, when it comes to something like this, I prefer to kind of maybe use the same product maybe 2 years in a row and then switch and just use a different, you know, different product. Even though in theory they're for the same reason, that I just like to rotate products.
Okay, Mike. Well, thank you very much. Happy New Year.
Sure. Same to you. Yeah, I mean, grubs, a lot of times people say, you know, they have been problematic as far as related to the moles. Yes, moles do eat grubs. There's no getting around it. But moles are not, grubs move very little. So as I said earlier, the main diet for moles is earthworms. And they are tunneling towards the sound of the earthworms. And then if the earthworms are not moving, the moles are not going to be up and moving around. And what happens is if the mole's heading towards the sound of an earthworm, you know, moving through the soil, and it comes across a grub, yes, it's going to eat it. It's going to be like an appetizer. But there's no way for them to know where the grub is or anything else. But pansies happen to be my favorite, but I do grow some toad flax as well. So keep that in mind. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Your home of the Cardinals.
Arenado swings and hits it deep to left field. That ball is out of here.
The Billikens.
Jumper. Yes! Billikens win!
The Chiefs.
Touchdown! Kansas City!
We are America's sports voice. KMOX.
Or 1-800-925-1120. We've got some phone lines open, but right now let's head over to Mary's yard. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Mary. Well, Happy New Year.
Same to you.
I have a dilemma. One of your callers earlier had inspired me to dig up my lantana, my one yellow lantana, which, of course, I put in a sunny window in the house, and it's doing well.
Really?
What I like about lantana, of course, is, you know, when you brush against the foliage, it has that lovely aroma.
Right.
Now, here's the dilemma with my lantana in the south window. When you rub the leaves, they smell like kerosene.
I know you probably can't solve the problem, but it is an unusual dilemma for me.
Well, when it's outside, how does it smell that? It shouldn't smell that much different, shouldn't it?
Oh, I know it shouldn't, but outside it has that lovely aroma on the foliage. So I know you probably can't solve the problem, but I just was curious. Maybe sometime when your other caller, who's successful with Lantana, maybe if she's listening, she can check her foliage and see if it's me or what. So anyway, I don't expect you to be able to solve the problem, but I just wanted to mention this.
Well, that's kind of interesting because I can't, it's just surprising there's going to be that much of a change from the smell outside. Unless when you're outside, you're smelling all kinds of other, let's say, atmospheric
things. No. I've grown Lantana along. No, I'm just saying. I wondered if the true sunshine had anything to do with this.
We'll
never know.
Yeah, when it's inside, it's going to be in the true sunshine anyway, even if it's behind a window pane.
I know. So. Anyway. That's my comment, and I hope you have a good week.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, I've never really noticed. It's been a long time since I've grown any Lantana inside, so I can't honestly say, I've smelled and noticed the difference. But even outside, I think this, the Lantana doesn't have a great fragrance. Obviously, it's one that you really like, so good luck with that. And now let's head over to Ginger's yard. Hi, Ginger.
Hi, Mike. I was calling earlier. You said about tree trimming. We have a really old silver maple in our front yard, and we had someone out. They're going to think about doing a little maintenance on it. Would say in March? Is that too soon to do it or not?
Well, generally with the maples, they prefer to be pruned when the weather is a little bit warmer, kind of a summertime situation. So, but there's, the problem with it doing it in the time that you're speaking of is the amount of sap flow.
Okay.
And the same thing in the fall. There's more sap flow. In the summertime, it seems to be less sap flow. And the sap flow, on an older tree, could be damaging from the standpoint of that it's losing. What sap is that's like the vascular system of the tree bringing nutrients up to the top to, for the bud formation and the bud opening in the leaves once the leaves come out and everything else.
Oh, okay. Well, it's really heavy on one side right now because of Ameren when they cut for the power lines.
Oh.
So we were trying to get a little off our roof.
Right.
But I don't know, what month would you think would be best?
I would say if they just wait for, two more months.
Two more months, okay.
But
okay.
If they feel safe, as far as doing it, and because this tree is, kind of in a, let's say, a difficult circumstance because it's been, half of its head has been cut off.
Right.
You might go ahead and just do it, and especially if it's hanging over your roof, because if it's a silver maple, then it has the maple squirts, and then your gutters fill with the maple squirts and everything else.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, that's just what I was wondering.
Okay, great.
I thank you, and you have a great day.
You did the same thing. And let's head over to Bob's yard. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Mike. Is that thanks for taking my call. With this weather that it's been warming up, getting cold, when's the best time to apply dormant oil on the fruit trees?
Basically, while they're still dormant. So look at the temperature on the label and just make sure that on the day that you do the application that it's within that temperature range. And that's about all you really need to worry about. But the dormant oil is really a really good thing to do as far as, let's say, killing lots of different kinds of insects that are either eggs or larvae or pupa that are on the stems or branches of your trees.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and if you end up, don't use it. And for anybody that doesn't apply the dormant oil, it's something that you apply during dormancy. there is a lightweight horticultural oil that you can apply after the new growth begins. So that's another thing that you could do as well.
Great. Thanks again, Mike.
Yep. And this time of year with the spring flowering, if you planted some of the smaller bulbs like the snowdrops, the grape hyacinths, the crocus, and things like that, they are going to be the first ones because they're smaller bulbs. You only plant them an inch or two deep versus the daffodils, tulips, or hyacinths, regular hyacinths, which go down 4 inches or so. So you can remember that the smaller bulbs are the first ones that are going to erupt and start to, you know, foliage is going to start showing up. And then that's, again, when you start to fertilize, as soon as you start to see the foliage coming up. And you could use a bulb booster, or you can use an all-purpose type of fertilizer as well. And you can feed, as long as the plant is growing, either flowering or foliage growing or anything else, every 2 to 3 weeks, probably every 3 weeks is going to be a little bit better. And once the foliage on your spring flowering bulbs start turning yellow, then you can go ahead and just stop fertilizing because it's not going to be to the advantage of the plant material. And this is a good time of year to think about some of the things that you may be wanting to add to your landscape. Maybe some plants that are going to attract the butterflies. Or how about a rest stop for the hummingbirds? Or I guess it's not really a rest stop. It's more like a fast food stop. And maybe adding some colorful vines or, you know, all kinds of different things like that can really make a huge impact. And you could get a larger pot, put a trellis in that, and grow annual vines very easily. Annual vines like morning glories and something along those lines, or hyacinth bean. Hyacinth bean vine is one of my favorite, you know, vines to grow. And I haven't grown them for a couple of years. What I like to do is I like to, you know, grow things and then kind of take a break from growing the specific thing and then start growing it again if it's something that I really enjoy. But the hyacinth bean vine with the purplish flowers, the hummingbirds absolutely just love them. And the aesthetics of them are really, you know, fantastic. In one pack, you can harvest the bean pods will have the beans in it. And even the peas or the pods or the seeds are really kind of interesting. That it looks like almost an Oreo cookie because the center has a white line across it or through it. So that's, you know, even just having a jar of the seeds, you know, kind of sitting around just as a, you know, reminder. I have a small jar in my garage and just as a reminder of how nice the seeds actually look on the hyacinth bean vine. Other things that you still want to keep looking for is if an area you're going to add some amendments to because you want to improve it, because you want to change the plant material that's growing in that space, and you want to create a raised bed and you want to raise it up to a certain level, don't add any more than 2 inches of, let's say, a topsoil compost mix at a time, and then you work that into the existing soil, and then add 2 more inches, and then work it together, and then add 2 more inches if you're going for a total of 6 inches to raise a bed, rather than dumping 6 inches on the ground or in the space all at once and working the soil as a result of that. So just be patient. And also with some of the areas, if you're going to be developing an area for a specific type garden space, whether it's a butterfly garden or whatever it happens to be, herb garden or anything else, just be patient and maybe wait for a full year after you already improved the soil before you actually do much planting, because you're going to be battling weeds, you're going to be battling circumstances that you didn't even realize what was going on. And that's kind of the important part of being patient and not just being desperate to get something done. And what you're going to need for about every 100 square feet of garden space, you're going to need about 2 cubic yards of total, you know, your amendments to raise this, you know, bed space up. So just keep that in mind. Let's head over to Cindy's yard. Hi, Cindy.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I
Good morning. I have a coral honeysuckle that we have put next to an ornamental gate that goes to nowhere. It's just a gate that's standing standing up. My husband has it supported. And I would like you to tell me how to prune that honeysuckle.
You want to prune it? You don't have to.
I don't have to prune the honeysuckle?
No. You're talking about the honeysuckle vine, right?
Honeysuckle vine, coral honeysuckle vine, and it gets very, very top heavy.
So, well,
that's going to be its
natural habit. So, basically, there's more the top, you know, however high it can go, that's going to be the most light, and that's going to be basically shadowing the area down below, so it's going to look skinny where it's coming up out of the ground.
Okay.
And so, I mean, you can prune it, but there's no reason to. It's going to change its overall impact or look for a short period of time, a couple of years, but then it's going to be back to where it is again.
Okay, great. So it flowers for a while, and then it kind of goes back, and it doesn't flower, and then it flowers not very full. You know, there's not very many flowers. Is there something that I need to amend with this? No.
That's, you know, that's kind of the genetics of the whole of the vine type honeysuckle. So I haven't grown that particular one, but I've grown the red trumpet honeysuckle. But the first, let's say, burst of flowers is always going to be the biggest, and then a rest, and then, you know, each time it flowers again, it's going to be less flowers.
Okay. May I ask another question? Do you have time for that?
Sure.
Okay. A long time ago, my father brought some lily of the valley from his mother's yard in the city. And it's gone. We live on 2 acres. And so it's gone from place to place a little bit. But I have it growing in a very, very shady place. And it's really, there's a big stand of it. So I want to know if it actually needs deep, deep shade, or could I put it in a place where there's a little bit moderate shade?
Yeah, and that'll grow in a part shade circumstance as well as in the deep shade. The advantage of it is that it grows in deep shade and can get thick and dense and everything else, but it doesn't have to have that.
It doesn't have to. Okay. What about wild ginger?
It's pretty much the same thing.
Okay. Okay, I can put it in a little more moderate shade. Okay, because it's far away from my house. I want to see it more because I love these little plants.
Right.
And so, okay.
Just make sure that the amount of, if there is any kind of direct sun that's going to hit this location, whether we're talking about the lily of the valley or the wild ginger, that you don't want the afternoon sun striking them.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes, my pleasure.
Okay, good.
Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline. Jennifer, we'll be talking to you as soon as the break is over.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, back to the phones we go. But if you do have a question, concern, or comment, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Jennifer's yard. Hi, Jennifer.
Good morning. Mike, I have two questions for you. One is it too late to trim back a Rosa Sharon? And secondly, I have an indoor peace lily, large peace lily plant, and it continues to grow beautifully, but I keep getting like one total brown leaf, and I don't know what the brown leaf means. Thank you.
The brown leaf might be the older leaves. So that's probably, just cut those off. As long as you've got a lot of good-looking leaves, that sounds perfect. And, what was your first question?
Is it too late to trim back a Rose of Sharon?
Oh, no. Because anything that blooms in the summertime, which the Rose of Sharon does, you can prune those all the way up until the new growth starts coming out or emerging. So you've got probably another 6 or 8, you know, maybe 4 to 6 weeks, depending upon the weather, before you're going to start to see the buds starting to open.
Okay. Should I fertilize inside the peace lily?
Yeah, there's no problem doing that. Just the type of fertilizer, you can go to your favorite garden center and tell them you've got house plants. and ask them what they have as far as what they would recommend, and then just fertilize half the label rate.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. And now let's head over to Kathy's yard. Hi, Kathy.
Morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I think I missed the earlier discussion about the Euronymus, but I have several of the upright Euronymus, and the leaves are all turned yellow and light brown, and a lot of them are falling off. But I tried to break off the ends, and they're still bendable, not snapping off. And I just wondered, do you think that they'll survive? It just all happened since that really cold spell.
Right, early in the season. So, right. Yeah, it's only an aesthetic thing, but all the foliage has, got that cold snap before it was ready to be that cold that fast. Those are going to drop off, but the stems, the branches, and everything else still seem to be fine. It's just going to be a little bit of time before they, the new growth starts coming out, and certainly before the new growth gets to be the same size as the growth that got damaged by that cold weather.
Okay, so we have keep our fingers crossed.
Right, exactly.
So they're not in the wrong zone then, right?
No, they're not. It was just, well, and technically they are, but because of our goofy weather, just like what you experienced, you've had several years where they went through the wintertime, made it fine, which is that cold snap came so soon before they were sort of like in their more dormant situation.
I see. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yes, and now let's go over to Bob's yard. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Mike, listen, I just got a quick question. What is the best time to treat for grubs? I live in South St. Louis, and there's a pretty good problem with that.
As far as grub treatment, you basically want to wait. You don't want to do it too soon because they're not going to be up near the surface, and so just kind of they've kind of burrowed down a little bit. So it's going to be all weather dependent, but let's say sometime around, I would put the grub control because they're more active, up near the surface for the grub control to work when the soil starts warming up. So I would say probably I wouldn't do it any sooner than mid-April. You do it earlier than that, and it's just going to be kind of a waste of your time and effort and money for the grub control.
Okay, one more question, Mike. What is your best, what do you like to use for grub control? And I have a Great Dane that smiles at you every day.
It really doesn't matter. I don't, when it comes to something like this, I prefer to kind of maybe use the same product maybe 2 years in a row and then switch and just use a different product. Even though in theory they're for the same reason, that I just like to rotate products.
Okay, Mike. Well, thank you very much. Happy New Year.
Sure. Same to you. Yeah, I mean, grubs, a lot of times people say, they have been problematic as far as related to the moles. Yes, moles do eat grubs. There's no getting around it. But moles are not, grubs move very little. So as I said earlier, the main diet for moles is earthworms. And they are tunneling towards the sound of the earthworms. And then if the earthworms are not moving, the moles are not going to be up and moving around. And what happens is if the mole's heading towards the sound of an earthworm, moving through the soil, and it comes across a grub, yes, it's going to eat it. It's going to be like an appetizer. But there's no way for them to know where the grubs are. So consequently, that's where the situation is. And as far as grubs only do damage to bluegrasses. They don't do damage to zoysia. They don't do damage to fescues, either one. It's just the bluegrasses. But still, they can be aggravating from that standpoint. So just kind of keep in mind that, when the soil starts really warming up, and if you've got a bluegrass lawn, that damage can start occurring at that situation. And what they do is they just eat the root system of your bluegrass lawn, and then that's what causes a bluegrass lawn to kind of go downhill. So again, this is a time of year where we passed a new year, But it's a time to, you know, like even a day like this where it's pretty, you know, the skies are pretty clear, just to take a walk if you haven't yet this year around in your yard and just take, you know, take a look at things. And if you've got trees that are overhanging your house, maybe consider having some of those, you know, branches removed, because the amount of debris, you know, falling off those trees, you know, it could cause damage to in your gutters. Even if you've got gutter covers and everything else, they help a lot, but they're not going to solve all the problems. And that goes back to the standpoint of not, you know, knowing how big a plant is going to be when it's installed, and then for it to overgrow the circumstance. So just have a great day. Enjoy the warmer weather from this morning, where it was like, as I said before, starry, starry night. Mike Miller, see you next week.